It's time for the Picture House Podcast with your hosts, Sam and Simon. Please ensure that your mobile phone is switched off, refrain from smoking, and keep conversation to a minimum. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show!
Thank you so much for talking to us today, Matt. A pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you. Great to be here.
I saw the film a couple of nights ago, and I had so much fun.
Oh, I'm so glad. Thank you.
Like, I think this new wave of apes films have just, like, consistently delivered, and every film shows us something new.
Which... Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, I think that for me was the mission of the film. You know, each of the films has been very different, right? Mm. Rise is different from Dawn, and Dawn is very different from War, but there's one constant. And for me, what the films really make up is this very dramatic arc of Caesar's character, you know? He starts... as a sort of discarded chimp who no one even sees as being anything. I mean, he was due to be murdered. And then he rises to become a revolutionary and frees apes from their bonds. And then in Dawn, he really is forced to become a leader in difficult times. And he is a unique character in that he is ape and human, but neither. He's an outsider. He was raised by humans, but he's an ape. And he... is an ape, but he wasn't raised by apes. So he has this unique understanding that connects him to both, and that was why he could have helped to broker the peace in Dawn, but we know it doesn't become Planet of the Apes and the Humans, and so he fails. And so this story was really about what he would do in the aftermath of that failure, as he was really haunted by that failure. And so what I really wanted us to do was to push him into an entirely new place. Each film had pushed him to a new place. And I figured he would be haunted by his failure and that he would be wondering how he could have that blind spot about Koba, that Koba couldn't find a way to live alongside humans. And the answer is because for all of the empathy, which is the bedrock of what Caesar's strengths have been, he couldn't quite... connect to the level of hatred that Koba had for humans, because he wasn't treated as badly treated by humans as Caesar had been. He also knew human love. Koba never knew that. He only ever saw the worst side of humans. So there was no way. That's like asking someone who had been through the horrors of like a concentration camp to sort of say, oh, well, maybe you could find a way to live alongside them. And it's like, I don't think you understand what I've been through. And so the idea of this film was to make him understand what Koba had been through, to push him to a new place through the extremes of the story and through the extremes of this war, so that we could tell a war story that wasn't just between species, but was really within Caesar.
I think that's why you're so invested in Caesar in this film, because we've seen him. We've seen him from birth, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
We know this guy. We know him in and out, and... Like, I think it's so shocking in this film to see him angry.
Yeah.
You know? Like, actually angry, and like, he wants revenge.
Yeah, I know. That was the fun thing, was imagining, indulging for a moment the idea of this character who had really such a level of empathy and who was struggling all the time to find the way to do the right thing, and then to push him to a place where he becomes, like, Clint Eastwood.
Yeah.
You know? And just like, wait a minute, here's Andy Serkis as Clint Eastwood. This is a very strange thing. But then, of course, you know, to make an audience go through that journey with him and feel like, okay, well, if that had happened to me, I'm not sure that isn't the way that I would react. And then, you know, take him on that journey, take the audience on that journey with him.
It's interesting you said Clint Eastwood, because it does feel like a Western at times. Like,
for
when
sure.
he saddles up with his buddies, and they go to that small like town where they find a girl.
Yeah, the little oyster shack town. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that it was definitely an intention to make it sort of a Western. You know, it sort of starts right in the middle of a war film, and then it becomes like a revenge Western. And then, but at the same time, it's kind of a mythic quest that's like Apocalypse Now, right? They go up the river trying to solve the mystery that is the Colonel by Woody Harrelson. And then it becomes another kind of movie, and it becomes eventually The Great Escape. And also, I would say biblical epics as well. You know, I
mean, absolutely, yeah.
The whole idea there was that it's supposed to cement his position as the seminal figure in all ape history, and the one that apes would look back to and say, without him, we wouldn't be here. So that meant it had to be biblical in nature. So the whole thing was this idea of trying to tell this epic tale that was still very intimate, because the strength of the franchise of these three films has been the emotionality of them, the idea of connecting into this very strange experience where the audience goes on an emotional journey relating to apes. You know, it's a great thing about this performance capture technology has reached a place, and the artistry of what Weta does, and obviously all of that is driven by the brilliance of the performance that Andy and the other actors give. It's reached a place where the emotional identification is very powerful. And so that's a very odd experience, to go to the movies and find yourself relating to and seeing yourself in the faces of apes.
It's like watching it. Like every like 5 or 10 minutes, I just keep thinking, this is CGI. How is this CGI? There's no way this is CGI.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Like, these have to be real apes.
Isn't that amazing? That's so great.
It's like the thing, because in this, you do all the things that people say are really hard to do with visual effects. Like, you get fur, you do fur, and you don't just do one character with fur. You have hundreds of characters with fur.
Amazing.
You do it in the rain. You do it in the snow.
Yeah.
Like, what are you thinking?
Yeah. Well, it's so interesting because, you know, when I came in on Dawn, what I wanted to do, because I noticed in Rise that the places where the lighting was sort of most, what you describe as naturalistic or realistic, that the apes looked astonishingly real, I thought. Like, there was a shot under some fluoro lights of Koba, where I was like, how is that not an ape? You know, incredible. And he's also an incredible model. So I said, well, I'd love to take us out of the studio and push us into, you know, this is going to be in the forest, let's shoot in the rainforest. And they were like, okay, we have to make the cameras more robust, the equipment more robust to do that, but we can do that. And I said, but will that do what I think it's going to do, which is that make it feel more real? And they were like, yeah, we think it will.
Wow.
And as we did that, you know, I was like, well, I want them to be spearfishing, so I, you know, can they step into the water? And I remember Dan Lemon said to me, well, they can step in, but they can't step out. And I was like, what does that mean? He said, well, we haven't quite gotten to a place where we can have the fur matted and wet the way it would be the moment it comes out of the water, and the way the water, the simulations of the water dripping on fur. And I was like, well, but at the beginning, they're going to be hunting in the rain. Like, that's what, you know, we have that close-up that starts on Caesar's eyes and pulls out. And they said, yeah, we're working on that. And we think by the end of the film, we might be able to have those drops. And so that shot, which we turned over for Comic-Con, we literally turned over that shot of Caesar, which is the opening shot of the movie, as it's the first shot we turned over because it had to be ready for Comic-Con. And it went through iterations all the way through the post of that movie. It was one of the last shots we finaled, and it had no drips on it for a very long time. And then all of a sudden, they're like, okay, so it's coming. Because I would say, guys, where's the water? Mm-hmm. And they're like, we're still working on it. And then finally, like in the last week, I think it was, it came through, and there were those drips. So Weta is constantly sort of working on the algorithms and the programs, the simulations, everything that they have in order to create something that looks real. And I remember at the end of Dawn, they said they had just remade the pipeline. And I was like, oh, how will that affect the next movie? And Dan Lemon, who's a super, said, well, it'll be essentially what you're used to. And I was like, oh, okay. And the thing now, having worked with him for 5 years, is that Dan Lemon always under-promises and over-delivers.
Oh, wow.
So the shots started coming in on War, and the first few shots that are coming in, I started going, wait a minute. This is not the same. And these effects are absolutely a high water mark in this area. The work that Weta did on this film is the best that's ever been done in this area. I mean, these are the best effects ever.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Like, I think people remember, that's probably still things like Avatar, which was 10 years ago now. That was long ago.
Yeah,
and it still looks
and
great.
And they did Avatar.
But now we're into the characters in Avatar aren't covered in fur, you know? And it's mostly a sunny, very well-lit, completely CGI environment, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we shot, the thing that we did and that we did extensively on Dawn and just as extensively on War was shooting in real locations and trying to have, because for me, the uncanny spectacle is the realism, right? If you have one fantastical element, which is that these apes can emote and express themselves in a human way, that should be your one really fantastical element. So you do that as realistically as possible, and then the audience goes on a journey which is potentially more emotional because you believe it. The more you believe it, and as these effects get more realistic, the illusion is something that, you know, it's funny because I often think that some people will sit there and go, these effects are amazing, and other people will just be, I feel like sometimes the public doesn't know how amazing the effects are. They just assume, oh, well, that just is what it is. Mm. I was like, no, you have no idea what they're what they're doing to make it look like that. You know, it's an incredible thing.
I think that's good, isn't it? That's what you want people to not see.
It is. Otherwise, we'd be thinking about that instead of the story. Mm. Yeah, that's exactly right.
What also really got me with the film was like how much of the story is told without dialogue, like in the previous Apes as well.
Sure.
Like, they do rely heavily on sign language and very simple language. And
yeah.
Even the humans, like Woody Harrelson doesn't really... I think Caesar probably has more lines than him. I don't know if that's true. But like it feels like Woody Harrelson is also quite a silent character.
He is, yeah. I mean, the movie is like... I think there's something about that economy of expression that... is very cinematic, and it was a real joy. You know, it's a real... The script is an interesting script to look at, because if you look at what we wrote, like, there are so many pages that have no dialogue on them. It's just like... And as a director, going, you know, knowing that I'm going to go forward and shoot that, it's incredibly exciting, because you're like, okay, how am I going to shoot this? And it just... It feels like something, you know, filmmaking-wise, that you can sink your teeth into. And it all becomes about behavior, you know? And it becomes about behavior... not just on the ape side, but as you're saying, like with Woody, on the human side, and about the expressiveness that doesn't come necessarily just through words.
I think just because they're both those characters going head-to-head are a force of nature.
Yeah.
And it's just more about their physical kind of presence and how
they
act.
Yeah, and their emotional and physical turmoil, really. Mm. It's about looking at the struggle that's going on within each of them, and obviously the struggle that's going on between them.
I'm really intrigued, like... how, I guess, because it feels in my brain anyway, it's probably not for you, but it feels so soon after the previous movie as well to have a film which is as epic and as polished as this film.
Oh, thank you.
When did you jump into this?
Immediately.
And what was the...
I did. I mean, literally, now here's the thing. First of all, I'm glad you said that because it was 3 years ago, so I'm glad it doesn't seem like it was too long, but I took off about 4 weeks once we released Dawn, and then I started working on the movie. And so I've been working on this movie for just about 3 years. So it's been a crazy long journey. We literally didn't finish the movie till about 8 days ago. And
wow.
These movies, when I say we didn't finish the movie, I mean, we just finished the movie. Like as the movie finally comes together, because there are so many ape shots, it's almost like, if you could imagine, like, what if you were shooting a movie with, you know, Brad Pitt, and he didn't exist until the last few weeks of your editing. I mean, it's a very strange thing, which is not to say, I mean, the shots are coming in over the course of a year.
Mm.
We're in post actually for over a year.
Yeah.
But you don't have everything fully rendered until literally the last day.
Wow.
Because that's the last day that Weta can give you any shots, because that's when you have to lock.
Mm.
And so it's at that moment that I finally see exactly what I've been working on for 3 years. So it's a very surreal experience, because then at that moment, it's time for me to show it to an audience.
Yeah.
So not only have I just seen it, but now the audience is going to see it. It's a very strange thing.
That's the best way to show off something that you've never seen before.
Exactly.
There
it's like, well, here it is. I just finished it. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's done. Enjoy.
I think it's done. Oh, my goodness. But it was, you know, it was a very gratifying thing to have. We actually, as crazy as it was, I actually had more time because I came into Dawn and, you know, even though the distance time-wise between Rise and Dawn was the same, I came in later in the process, and I came with a story I wanted to tell, which they let me tell, but I had to make the release date.
Oh, wow.
So we went in with an unfinished script, and it was all those crazy things you hear, and we just kept working on the story all the way through post.
Mm.
And this one, the movie that we wrote is the movie that I made.
Like, how long ago did you shoot the live-action sort of elements, bits with Woody and Andy? And
a little over a year ago. Yeah, we finished... I think we probably... It was probably like a year and a half ago. We've been in post for, like I said, a little over a year.
Nice.
Yeah.
So it's impressive to be able to finish all of that stuff in... In my brain, a year just isn't enough time.
No, it's crazy. I mean, you know, we Weta was on the movie from, you know, almost the very beginning. And, you know, we spent half the day editing every day in post and half the day on the phone to Weta in New Zealand. And they were long days. I would come in at 9 and I would go home at midnight for 5 days a week, all the way through the entire production. I didn't have dinner with my family during the week for well over a year.
Wow.
Probably 2 years.
I'll
tell you one of the things I'm most excited about is that not only does the world get to see the movie, but I get to see my family.
I think that's important. I think the age should release you.
Yes. Good, that's why I put my son in the movie. He's just turned 6 and he's an orangutan.
Oh, nice.
A little toddler orangutan, and we actually all put our kids, you know, Terry Notary's kids are in the movie, and because it's an opportunity, you know, it's an opportunity to get to see your family.
I think that's a really special thing to do.
Yeah, it was really neat. You know, I just figured, well, someday he'll look back, and I just kept trying to impress upon him. I said, here's the thing you have to understand. You're doing something that most people in their lives will never do. Mm. You're going to be an ape in a Planet of the Apes movie. And, you know, he was 5, and he's like, huh? And he was in Dawn, too. It, you know, he plays one of the extra chimps, you know, and an orangutan.
So he's two characters in this franchise.
He's actually multiple characters, but he's in 2 films.
Nice. Yeah.
All the kids are. What happens is we got a group of kids, and they play all the kids, you know, that populate the world.
The very first thing we see is the 20th Century Fox logo, without the traditional fanfare.
Yeah.
How do you, I mean, because that doesn't happen very often.
I had to ask to do that. You know, my feeling was I just wanted us to go all out.
Mm.
I wanted to signal something right up front that said, okay, look, you know, there are a lot of movies where it's just another one of those movies. And the nice thing for me about these films that have made up this trilogy is, I said, each one is different.
Mm.
And I wanted it to be clear right from the beginning that we wanted you to feel like this was different. And I was like, well, it's funny because I look back and the thing that made me first think about it is my son became obsessed with Peanuts and Schroeder's playing the theme on his piano.
Mm.
And I was like, you know, this is so interesting because Warner Brothers has done it a lot where they change, you know, the logo and that kind of stuff. But Fox does it rarely. So I asked about it and they said, oh, no, you have to play the Fox fanfare. It has to be that music. And they really change it very, very rarely. And I was like, well, look, I think we all feel like we're trying to do something really special here. I'd like to do that. And I'd like to ask, because I asked Michael Giacchino, I said, could you imagine an apes version of the fanfare? And he wrote back, hell yeah.
Amazing.
And so I asked them, I said, you know, I'd really like to do this. And they said, yeah.
That's remarkable. I see a lot of movies in this line of work, and you know, I love the Fox fanfare. It's amazing, but it's so nice to hear someone mix it up a little bit.
Yeah,
and I think
it was
Michael Giacchino did. I mean, the whole score in the movie. I'm such a big fan of his work.
He's amazing.
I don't know how he has time to do all of the films he does.
Because he's a genius.
It's mind blowing.
No, he writes so quickly, and it's amazing because, you know, I love collaborating with him because he writes a full score, and then I come over to his house for like a week, and we go through the score together, and literally as I'm saying, well, you know, I think this beat here, we're looking for this emotion or this thing that I'm not sure we have here, and literally with me in the room, he will rewrite the music. And you're like, oh, okay. He's just incredible. He's just an amazing person. He's really great.
I think it's such a good way to start a film, like from the off, like you're transported off of this, you know, planet and into this other reality, and it really does feel like the apes have taken over the studio.
Oh, that's cool. That's really cool. And you know, Michael, he like I am, is a huge Planet of the Apes fan, and he is a real fan of the Goldsmith score, and he is using some of the same percussion. And literally one of the percussionists from the 68 movie, has done every Planet of the Apes movie, this guy, Emil.
Wow.
He's an incredible percussionist. He played with like Thelonious Monk and George Harrison. He's amazing. But he played on every single Planet of the Apes score. And there are these bowls, Emil's bowls, that were played on the Goldsmith score. And we use them in both Dawn and in War. And they're playing as part of the percussion in that 20th Century Fox logo. So that whole thing of being very percussion heavy was to sort of really apify the logo.
That's incredible. What an achievement.
Cool.
Well, thank you so much for talking to us, Matt.
My pleasure.
I really enjoyed the film.
Oh, thank
you so
much.
I'm booked in already for a second screening.
All right, cool.
thank you. And yeah, can't wait to see you next.
You have been listening to the Picture House Podcast, a Picture House's production brought to you by Picture House Cinemas. We would like to thank everyone who works at Picture House Cinemas and everyone who has ever attended a screening of a film at a Picture House cinema. Thanks for listening and see you next week. You have been listening to the Picture House Podcast, a Picture House's production brought to you by Picture House Cinemas. We would like to thank everyone who works at Picture House Cinemas and everyone who has ever attended a screening of a film at a Picture House cinema. Thanks for listening and see you next week!